I'm J.A. Adande, and it's time for Three Stories You Should Know. This week, we're talking about everything from the college admissions scandal to Game of Thrones. I'm joined by the Undefeated's Lonnae O'Neill and The Ringer's Claire McNear. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
I'll start off. Surely you recall the outrage that swept across the nation when we learned of the college admissions scandal. That story included allegations of rich parents paying six-figure sums to get their kids into elite schools using athletic exceptions, even though their kids didn't play the sports. But you'll notice no one gets upset when students who might not meet the academic standards get into schools because they actually are great athletes. That's because there's a chance their talent can bring glory to dear old alma mater. There only seems to be a problem when these players get rewarded with money for their abilities. A recent FBI investigation into the underbelly of college basketball resulted in convictions and plea deals for assistant coaches, shoe company representatives, and would-be agents who threw money around to secure players' services. Most of the offenders are African American. So far, we've seen sentences of 6 to 9 months, with more to come. In the college admissions scandal, out of 50 people facing charges, 16 people have pleaded guilty so far, and most of them are white. Prosecutors have recommended everything from no prison time to 46 months in prison. I'm curious to see which group of offenders will end up getting punished more severely and what that will say about our justice system's priorities.
Yeah, I mean, what's been interesting for me to see is that in both cases, prosecutors have been kind of trying to make the argument that the universities themselves are the victims, which is, shall we say, a tenuous proposition to start with. And it's especially galling in the case of athletics, when those same schools, very, very wealthy schools, for the most part, are making so much money off the athletes who, in some cases, may have received some money from this scheme, which is sort of what led to the criminal charges in the first place. So what has been heartening to me, at least in kind of watching the college basketball case progress a little bit, is it does seem like the juries in those cases maybe haven't fully bought at least that aspect of it, that the universities are victims. And we'll see if that is also true in the college admissions scandal. But, you know, it's a pretty out there thing to advance.
I agree, Claire. The notion of the universities as victims, though, really sticks in my craw. When it comes to athletics, they're victims of not having complete control of these athletes' lives and bodies and finances and thought processes and independent decision-making capacities, so that it takes away potentially from their ability to, you know, have their PR victories or to monetize it, right? Setting themselves up as a victim is really pretty noxious.
Yeah, it was really preposterous, I would argue.
Yeah, and I mean, they're clearly benefiting just over and over and over. You know, as each season goes by, they are benefiting in just the most concrete of ways. And here they are kind of holding themselves up to be pitied and, you know, remunerated maybe. So it's just pretty absurd.
And I made the case that really the victims could be the people who are being prosecuted. In many cases, the assistant coaches who are put in this position of doing everything they can to secure the best players that they can for their schools. That's their job. This is the way the game is played. There is a lot of money under the table that's being thrown around. And so by playing by the rules of this game, they were the ones who were busted and could face jail time, even though, you know, there really was no victim. No one was really damaged in this. No laws were broken necessarily, more so NCAA violations. And it really seems absurd.
There's a level of hysteria when it comes to the notion of thinking that black athletes might have some unfair advantage, or that, you know, a black middleman or assistant coach might be reaching out in a way that is inaccessible to other people. And when you put the overlay, when you sort of undergird that with a black body, right, the hypocrisy just goes over the moon.
Absolutely. Lonnae, it's time for your topic. What do you have for us?
Okay, so Alisa Montaño, she's a middle distance runner. In 2014, she ran in the U.S. Track and Field Championships as 8 months pregnant. She, for Mother's Day, had an editorial in the New York Times where she talked about the toll that being a pregnant athlete took on her in terms of her economics, in terms of sponsorship with companies like Nike. Built into that calculation to be a mother and an athlete is an economic insecurity and real health challenges, right? Because you get your sponsorship snatched or pulled or cut back. So that incentivizes an athlete to take risks, to try to hide their pregnancy, to try to come back before they're able to. So that started this couple of weeks of just news about these issues. Allison Felix, who's a sprinter, testified before Congress about maternal risk and mortality, particularly difficult for Black mothers who risk dying in pregnancy 3 to 4 times more than their white counterparts. She was one of them, and she had an emergency cesarean section at 32 weeks. And then I wrote about Natasha Hastings, a 4x400-meter relay gold medalist who is pregnant now, and she just announced on social media, even though she's 5.5 months pregnant, because she was afraid of what her sponsors would do.
Claire, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think when Serena Williams first kind of came out with the story of giving birth a while back now, she had this terrible kind of emergency happen right after she gave birth. It was a life-threatening situation, and she has struggled with blood clots. I think people were shocked. I mean, you hear abstractly about a maternal health crisis and one that, you know, disproportionately affects the African-American community, but you don't think of it as something that happens here or now. And it's amazing to see athletes like Williams and like Natasha Hastings who've gone through so much and who are, you know, fighting both to receive just the basic kind of maternal rights as athletes and as working mothers.
You know, if Nike can stand by athletes and honor the contracts of athletes who are in the middle of controversy, we see them do it all the time, right? Most notably Colin Kaepernick. But yeah, they can't stand by women who are pregnant. And then almost simultaneously, we've had some very restrictive abortion laws being approved in various states. It's interesting how these two conversations are walled off, basically. Look at the pushback women are facing when they're trying to have children. And also, if we're seeing these examples of African-American women in top-level physical condition, if we're seeing them gravely threatened by wanted pregnancies, think about the physical danger that African-American women in worse condition with unwanted pregnancies could face. And we're not having that discussion at all.
Absolutely. There's what Allison Felix called a culture of silence. And talking with some of these athletes, if you do not have bodily autonomy, you cannot be a top-level athlete. You can't be an athlete, period. You can't compete. So questions about abortion, questions about pregnancy and timing and healthcare are all central to the question of, do we really want to even have female athletes? And if so, what kinds of supports, economic, legislative, in terms of public policy? These have to be the upfront conversations.
Claire, what do you have for us?
So bear with me for a second. I'm going to talk about Game of Thrones. There was a lot of criticism of Game of Thrones in its final season, which wrapped up last weekend. A lot of folks, myself included, felt that everything was a little bit rushed and that, you know, some of the character development was perhaps a bit flawed. And here's a minor spoiler coming, so cover your ears for the next 30 seconds or so if you've, you know, somehow avoided the news of how it shook out with the Iron Throne. But I just wanted to give a shout out to Arya Stark, who was maybe the only major character whose arc made any sense by the end of Game of Thrones. She literally rides off into the sunset, or sails off anyway. And, you know, she learned the lessons of life and love, and it's pretty great. But what I wanted to talk about more broadly, which I think is sort of the bigger thing with Game of Thrones and is maybe the more relevant one for our purposes, Game of Thrones was not obviously within the domain of sports, but I would say that it's about as close as you can get without a referee. You know, it was appointment viewing every Sunday night. And everybody's on social media reacting in real time. Everybody's talking about it the next day at work. Can you believe who did this and who won or who lost? And, you know, it feels like this might be one of the last TV shows that this element is true of.
And I definitely thought there was a sports-like component. Unfortunately, that didn't apply when it came to the end of the series and the discussion that followed. And in sports, we understand that our team might not win. Like, we go in and we by definition, there's going to be a loser. But in TV, we demand and expect victories all the time. Well, guess what? They have the possibility of losing too, right? Of not getting a ride, of not fulfilling our expectations when it comes to the way the story plays out. And I think the reaction wasn't treated in a sportsmanlike manner, where you had all this whining, right? Even petitions that we want you to reshoot the show. They're not going to reshoot the show. And it really, I think, dismisses the efforts that they put into it. You know, the 55 nighttime shoots in freezing weather to do the Battle of Winterfell. And for us to just, you know, complain and whine, and for people to be so dismissive because the outcome wasn't what you wanted or what you expected, I think is really disrespectful to everyone involved.
We invest in teams. We invest in shows. We invest in characters. We do whine when it doesn't go our way. And with both athletes and in terms of a show arc that we may not like, we're not trying to see process, right? We want to see results. We are just sitting in front of the TV. We want to be entertained. And when it doesn't, we take to social media.
To bring this back to sports once again, I think that in the same way that you see fans try to, you know, personally contact and criticize on social media an athlete who maybe didn't have a good game or, you know, the team, you know, just isn't coming together the way that they're supposed to, right, according to the fan. And yeah, I mean, it's wrong when people do that to athletes, and it's wrong when people do that to actors and to showrunners.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been the Undefeated's Lonnae O'Neill and The Ringer's Claire McNear. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's be real for a second. Some shows need to rely on dragons and zombies and executions to hold your attention. Only a Game doesn't. We just find great stories about real people. Subscribe to the Only a Game podcast to make sure you catch all the great stories every week.